Welcome into Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton.
And I'm Dr. Zach Clinton, and together we're your hosts. Thank you for joining us.
If you enjoyed today's program and you feel called to help us equip the church to provide mental health care and to help those in need, visit our foundation at aaccfoundation.org. That's aaccfoundation.org. Hey, there you're going to find a little bit more about the impact we're having in local communities to strengthen families and individuals. We're on a mission to help equip people everywhere to improve their relationship with God and the ones they love.
We'd love for you to be a part of our family. Let's bring a message of hope and encouragement to today's generations. Your gift ensures that this program and your station remain on the air. And on today's program, my dad, Dr. Tim Clinton, will be joined by a great guest. So let's get started.
Well, thanks for that. I'm Dr. Tim, and I'm joined today by Dr. Matt Stanford. He's the CEO of the Hope and Healing Center and Institute in Houston, Texas. Matt has worked extensively with individuals of a variety of ages facing a wide range of mental health challenges, including aggression, personality disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder, substance abuse and dependence, bipolar disorder, and even schizophrenia. He has a heart for today's youth as well. Over the next 2 days, we're going to be diving into a topic close to both of our hearts. It's at the intersection of the church, mental health, and raising healthy kids. Dr. Stanford has written a book entitled Grace for the Children. It's all about finding hope in the midst of child and adolescent mental illness. He's going to be sharing how the church is often ill-equipped to serve and support families with children who have special needs or mental health challenges. Too often, these families are left feeling like they just don't belong. That's a real problem, especially when we see how in the Gospels, Jesus would invite and embrace children rather than cast them out. I invite you to join us today and tomorrow. Matt, my friend, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Matt, as we get started, I think this is one of the most important subjects I think we'll do all year, and that is mental health, the church, and our kids. Matt, prior to the pandemic and everything we've been through, we had a mental health crisis in our country. I think most mental health experts would agree we don't have a crisis now. We have a mental health disaster. Matt, what are you seeing in terms of mental health in our country and the church?
No, absolutely. I mean, prior to the pandemic, we already had a mess. And just about a month ago, a study came out, a national survey of parents of teens that was done by the University of Michigan Medical School found that 50% of parents of teens reported that their teen now has either a worsening or new mental health care problem as a result of the pandemic. And so the numbers that we're seeing are just really, they're almost unbelievable. We're seeing increases in substance abuse, increases in depression and anxiety, particularly again in teen girls. Are being affected the most. Academic failure. I mean, it's more than just your child doesn't like to do this on Zoom or online. We hear a lot of that right now, that the children aren't doing well because of that. But the reality is a lot of that is related to the fact these children are isolated. They have no social connection anymore. And they're going into depression or anxiety issues, and nobody's really picking up on it. And the mental health fallout from this pandemic is going to be years in the future. And you mentioned the church, and you and I both agree that really the church has not only a significant role to play in this, but really may be the answer to the mental health crisis that we're dealing with.
Yeah. Matt, I guess in some ways we love to think our kids are immune to the dark world that we live in and the insanity and everything else that's going on around us, but they're not. Matt, stress in our kids. Archibald Hart, whom we both love, a pioneer in the Christian counseling world, a psychologist who wrote a lot on stress in our kids, said he believed that we're seeing now children as young as 5 years of age developing ulcers and more. What's happening to us, Matt, and our kids, really? There's a lot of factors that are feeding this.
Oh, absolutely. And really, anxiety is the foundation of a lot, if not the majority, of the mental health issues that we're seeing in children. I mean, they've been tracking anxiety and usually they use older adolescents in high school or freshmen in college as kind of a marker. And they've been tracking that since the 30s. And what you find today is that your kind of older adolescent or freshman in college has the level of anxiety of what you would see in inmates in the 40s and 50s. And so we these children are at really almost clinically meaningful levels of anxiety on a daily basis. And where that comes from is they are just absolutely overwhelmed with information. They're absolutely overwhelmed with daily decisions they have to make in relationship to their image and their connections and things with social media. But at the same time, they are being taught less and less how to deal with stress and how to be resilient in those situations. Our children, because of the society we live in, really almost it doesn't matter what economic level you're at. They have things at their fingertips no matter what they want. It's instantaneous gratification. They don't deal well with stress. They're not resilient. And part of that is also the fact that our adults aren't resilient. Our adults are falling apart at stress. We don't know how to interact. We don't know how to conversation. Social media has pulled children apart from everyone even more. So you have the semblance of intimacy and connection, but you don't actually have the opportunity to vent and discuss and reason things through. And so when our children are presented with stress, they fall apart. And he's absolutely right. When we're seeing five-year-old children that are struggling with significant anxiety issues because they don't have models to show them how to deal with it, and they're being exposed to problems that five-year-olds in the past would never have been exposed to before.
Yeah. Matt, if you're a parent and you have what some people would call an extra effort child or a special needs child, you realize that your family's probably a little more different than maybe those around you, certainly maybe those in church around you. And you've got some added responsibility, maybe added burden. And I use that word carefully in a way that I hope people understand is packed full of love. There's just, though, a lot of extra going into taking care of my family and parenting our family. And a lot of those families begin to realize that the people in the world around them don't really understand what it's like in their home. Let's talk about some of the more common issues that you see in those type of families. I know in your book, Grace for the Children, Finding Hope in the Midst of Child and Adolescent Mental Illness, you talk about categories, impulsivity, autism, and we'll talk about the spectrum. You talk about disruptive behavior disorders, depression, anxiety disorders, eating disorders, and more. Matt, what are some of the most common disorders that you see? And what are some of the statistics so we can get a measure on this?
Well, in children and adolescents, you're looking at one out of every five children and adolescents going to struggle with a mental health problem in a given year.
That's a lot of families.
That's an enormous number of families. And that really probably more disturbing statistic is that a majority of those children and adolescents with mental health problems will never receive any treatment. In the U.S. today, the majority of people, adults or children, don't receive treatment. And that's pretty disturbing. I think, one of the things people have to understand is that half of all chronic mental health conditions are in place by 14 years old.
That's worth repeating because people need to hear this.
Half of all chronic mental health conditions, so conditions that are going to be troublesome for the duration of a person's life, they are in place by 14 years old and 75% by 24 years old. And in the U.S. today, the average period of time that goes by between the onset of symptoms and first treatment for the people who are lucky enough to get treatment is 11 years. It almost sounds like you're just making up numbers. I mean, try to imagine any other medical condition that you could wait 11 years to get treatment for. So we have children and adolescents out there struggling with depression, anxiety disorders, eating disorders, bipolar disorder. You know, what are the problems in these families? And, you know, we did a study a few years ago looking at specifically families in faith communities and what kind of issues they were struggling with. And, I think what you would expect would be on the top, and that is the significant financial problems, because mental health issues are expensive to get treatment for, because the reimbursements from insurance are much less generous than they are for physical illnesses. And so a lot of insurances just don't even cover mental health. So a lot of it comes out of pocket. So you have significant financial struggles in these families. You have significant conflict and relational breakdown. You also then have if we're dealing with a child or adolescent that has to be cared for more so than a child or adolescent who has more typical behaviors and mental health issues. And so, you may have a, a family member that has to step out of the workplace to care for that child, to be present with that child or homeschool that child. And then you can add in academic issues. So, I mean, we're looking at pretty significant issues that really kind of begin to tear at the fabric of the family. And again, as you said, people outside of that, people who haven't experienced that, don't fully appreciate kind of the almost a bomb-like effect that these mental health problems have on the family. It's not just the child or adolescent we're talking about. It's the entire family.
These families go through a lot of emotion, Matt, inside the home because of all this effort and responsibility. And at the same time, they perceive they're being looked down upon, or you understand what I'm saying. Here comes that family with that child.
Right. Well, I would have to say that they're right. They are being looked down upon and they're being judged. And it's unfortunate. And I see it every day. You know, the people at the church don't know their backstory. They don't know necessarily what their child is struggling with or what they've gone through or what treatments they've done or not done. And they just assume it's some type of behavior problem. If they just parented him better, they spanked him more, or whatever the cliche of the day is, things would be better. And, you know, and if I'm being perfectly honest, I mean, churches are not receptive. Churches are not prepared for things that go outside of a very rigid structure on Sunday morning. You know, we have this service we have to get through and this hierarchy of things we have to do, and nothing is going to affect that. And so a child shows up and that child is, you know, not displaying typical behaviors, and we have a problem with that. We put the problem back on the parents, you know. And so what I find is that families, you know, they usually start out with something like they try to go to church and then the child acts out or the child is not received well. And then one parent will go and one parent will stay home and they'll do that for a while, which is exhausting in its own right. And then they can't even worship together as a family. And then ultimately they drift away from the church altogether, because most churches, unfortunately, they have very little to offer a family that has a child that has any type of disability or a mental health problem. Now, physical disabilities and even autism, which is a neurodevelopmental issue, churches are much more open and receptive to today. But what we have when we think of mental health problems, we think of more of like a hidden disability. They're not quite as receptive. And usually no thought is given to that until the family shows up. And that's far too late. You know, I have a story, just like you probably have a million, of a family that showed up at a church and literally was met at the door with their child that was already kind of displaying some behavioral issues. And they literally told the family, "We don't have anything for you here. You should go to a different church." That was the first time they ever went there. Hmm. So, you know, Jesus loves you. We have to be prepared to reach out to those that are most distressed, that are most broken, not just those that follow our kind of pattern of behavior.
Matt, my dad served for nearly 60 years as a pastor in central Pennsylvania. We love the church. I know you love the church. We have a real burden to see mental health addressed within the church. Dr. Stanford, I want to come back to your story in your book about a mildly autistic child with ADHD named Charlie. And he came to the church. He had behavioral problems in Sunday school. I think he bit a Sunday school teacher. The children's minister saw behavioral problems as willful disobedience rather than a neurodevelopmental disorder. In other words, they didn't understand Charlie and right. They weren't attuned to Charlie. Here we have a boy and a family who are trying to bring their child to church. They've got some issues, some challenges. How do we embrace them in our church community?
Well, I think what we have to do as a body of believers, we have to have these conversations before individuals with children that have these issues ever show up. We have to be prepared to offer them something before they show up. You know, once Charlie's in the class and we're just going to try to treat him like every other child in the same structure, and then he acts out, that's just not going to work. And so I think what we have to do is we have to take these things into account in the context of our child and adolescent ministries that we have at churches. We have to have training for our volunteers and our staff so that they understand these problems, that they know what they are and what they're not, and that they know some appropriate ways to respond and work with the children that have these issues. I think secondly, we have to ask the parents, do your children have any type of mental health problem or neurodevelopmental problem, or, you know, list out issues, you know, and ask them that information. not to kind of somehow mark them, but so we can follow up and say, okay, well, you say that your child is on the autism spectrum. Well, tell us what works with your child? What doesn't work with your child? How can we make your child the most comfortable in this environment where we can minister to them most effectively? So now the parents have given you some tools to work with that child. And then I think we also have to think about specialized ministries on top of that. So what works really well in the context of children that have any type of disability or mental health issue is usually a buddy system, you know, where a child is assigned a buddy, an older, like high school adolescent or college age, or even a young adult. Those people are given training. And then every week when Charlie comes, his buddy Jim is going to meet them there. And the parents turn Charlie over to Jim. And Jim is there every week with Charlie. And he goes to Sunday school with Charlie. And if Charlie is struggling, then Jim might be the one that helps him or walks him out in the hallway or what. So Jim is always there and the parents don't have to worry. And that's a much more inclusive way to deal with issues like this than to say what's been done in the past, which again, I'm not negating this because it still can be effective, but a special class for children that have special needs where you kind of segregate them off. With a buddy system, you're able to not only train others to be involved in ministry, but you're able to keep those children in kind of the mainstream ministries. And then I think finally, what we have to do is we just have to let go of this kind of false rigidity, this kind of structure that we have on Sunday morning that, you know, what God cares about is getting through the service or the Sunday school. What God cares about is people. If Charlie comes and has a great time and his parents can have a break and they can hear the word, however that happens, that's what God cared about. Not whether Charlie did exactly the way we've done Sunday school for the last 50 years in the Baptist church or whatever. What's important in God's economy are people, and people are broken and desperate for him. And that's what we need to present to both Charlie and his parents.
Matt, I know in your book, Grace for the Children, you contend that all children are fearfully and wonderfully made in the image of God. Even children who have special needs, challenges, issues, our extra effort, and that our attunement is really carrying out what is meaningful discipleship. And Matt, you're talking about the children. We also have to see the family. I had a gentleman say this to me, Matt, dude, they have no idea. They don't have a clue to what we're going through as a family. They got all these nice little programs and everything's tidy, but if anything upsets the apple cart there, and my family is going to upset the apple cart, it basically means we're not welcome at that church. Or in other words, we don't have a place for you to fit in. And I know, Matt, it takes extra effort. I know it may mean training some people in mentoring activities or doing some one-on-one work, but isn't that the work of the ministry here just for a moment?
Absolutely. I mean, I'll tell you right now, if you're working at a church, and this Sunday, you run your church and everything just goes off without a hitch, it's time to expand your ministry. Because it's not about being comfortable. Again, it's about people, and people are a mess. You know, we could talk about it in the context of the service. What happens if a homeless guy walks in and sits down in your front pew? I mean, what happens if a guy shows up and he's drunk? We don't want to just throw these people out. We want to draw these people in. I mean, that's the house of God. I mean, in a sense, he's drawing them to us. And so if we can't care for a child who has a mental health problem and the family that's desperately trying to care for him, then I don't even sure we have the right to even call ourselves the Church of Jesus Christ. Because I'll tell you right now, I think Jesus said something about keeping children away from him. It'd be better if you had a millstone put around your neck and thrown into the water. So, I mean, you know, he was angry at his disciples just for trying to keep children from coming and sitting on his lap to get a blessing. I mean, I can't imagine what God feels like when, you know, that story I told you before, when someone tells a family, there's nothing for you here. There's nothing for you here in the church. I mean, I almost laugh at this point because that's so, I mean, I could tell you stories, Tim. I put some in the book, but I mean, you know them as well as I do. I mean, churches that got restraining orders against families to keep their child out of the church because the child acts out. I mean, I can't even fathom where the sympathy and the compassion went, because certainly that's not what Jesus would have done. I mean, any interaction he has with children is is graceful and healing. And so, I mean, we have to look beyond the structure we have on Sunday morning. We have to start saying it's all about people and it's about kids. And as you said, these families are being torn apart. I mean, just one thing people don't understand is that the level of stress that these families go through in stress research, when you want to find highly stressed populations to do research on how that stress affects their DNA and their brains and things like that, one of the populations that's used by stress researchers is they go in and get the mothers of children with disabilities, because they are considered one of the most highly stressed populations in the world. And they literally find that it causes their chromosomes to come apart. Their DNA is literally coming apart because of the level of stress. So, I mean, we're not just talking about a normal level of stress here. You had a bad day at work. We're talking a level of stress that literally is destroying your body.
I can only imagine what kind of response we would get up on social media if we opened it up and said, hey, tell us about your experiences if you have a child who is struggling with an issue and the local church. Matt, you wrote in the book that 30 to 40% of those type of families have had a negative experience with their church and or pastor. And I know, again, not a beat down, just a recognition piece here that says, hey, here's something we need to address, because it's the ministry. It's what we do. We reach out. You bet. We are the hands and feet of Christ, especially to these type of situations. Matt, let's close this way. I know we're out of time for today's program, and we're going to have a lot of fun tomorrow. But the church, you say, tends to be, when they don't know what to do, more disciplinary than accommodating. And they're often driven more by fear and ignorance than they are grace and wisdom. Close us in a positive way about how we can move in that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if we just, you know, remember our foundation of our faith. I mean, it's faith, it's grace, it's love, it's forgiveness. Let's not worry about why a child is acting the way they are. Let's set up a structure in which we love them and show them grace. And let's work with the parent to understand them better. Because again, the gospel, the good news of Jesus is transformative to children and adolescents and adults across the board, and whether they have a mental health problem or not. And so we have an opportunity to really support this family in a very kind of tangible way, giving them a respite, and also loving their child in a way that many people in the world simply will not. They'll push them aside. And so we need to be the place where they can go and really experience that unconditional love that God has given to each of us. And if we do that, you know, we've worked as a transforming agent in their life. And we really have, as you said, been the hands and feet of Jesus.
Yeah, you and I share a common dream, and that is we want to see mental health ministries developed in and through the local church. People who are trained to understand, in other words, to recognize and maybe respond in an immediate way, kind of as a first line of defense, a first responder, and then to understand what it means to help these families, these individuals, these kids get the treatment that they need.
Fighting the clock, so much covered, but honestly, there's so much more to discuss with Dr. Stanford. I'm going to ask Matt to come back tomorrow. I'm going to ask you to come back too. I think we can all learn from his wisdom. If you're a parent of a child struggling with mental health issues, the rest of the conversation tomorrow is just for you. Until then, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.
Hey, everybody, this is Dr. Zach Clinton, licensed counselor from the American Association of Christian Counselors, with your Mental Health Minute. Feeling like a failure doesn't mean you are one. It just means you're human. Every great person you admire has failed. What separates them isn't perfection. It's perseverance. Scripture says in Proverbs chapter 24, verse 16, though a righteous man falls seven times, he rises again. Clinically, shame-based thinking keeps people stuck. but self-compassion activates the brain's learning and resilience centers. God never shames his children. He convicts us to restore us. Failing doesn't remove your calling. Sometimes it reveals your need for grace. So write down one failure that haunts you. Then write next to it, God isn't done with me. Say it out loud and rise again. This has been your Mental Health Minute with Dr. Zach Clinton. For more information, visit aacc.net.
Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be. At Christian Care Connect, our mission is to connect those seeking help with a provider who offers the faith-based care they need. At CCC, we offer free mental health assessments for the user to help gauge their psychological and emotional well-being, as well as free self-help blog resources to help educate readers on topics such as depression, anxiety, and more. Christian Care Connect bridges the gap between those seeking help and the caregivers offering it, fostering connections rooted in clinical excellence. If you're looking for help, it's closer than you think. And if you're a provider who's ready to offer help, this site is for you too. Visit ChristianCareConnect.com to find the help you need or get listed as a provider. That's ChristianCareConnect.com.